December 11th, 2022. Aviemore, the Scottish Highlands. Argentinian Rodrigo Falcon disappears in the early hours of the morning after leaving a nightclub in the village. The last confirmed CCTV footage of Rodrigo shows him walking in the opposite direction to home. For over 5 months, Rod's family and friends have searched in vain for him to no avail. If you have information on the disappearance of Rodrigo Falcon, please contact the Missing Rodrigo Falcon Facebook page. Leave a voicemail on 0800-887-0111. Text 0745-644-100 or email rod@mm.st.
Primary sources for this episode include missingpeople.org.uk, Police Scotland, visitavermore.com, the Strathspey Herald, the Press and Journal, the Northern Times, the BBC, the Daily Record, and the Scottish Daily Express. Hi guys, welcome back to episode 165 of Unknown Passage, a podcast that tells the stories of those who have gone missing or have been murdered abroad. And no, I didn't just affect a Scottish accent for the intro to make it more interesting. That is our patron who requested this week's episode, location request. But before I introduce her, I just want to give you some good news. A few weeks ago, I basically talked in world headlines about how one of Australia's worst kind of serial killers, Paul Daniel, was up for parole after 30 years non-parole period. I have some good news. Many of you signed the petition. A lot of people did. Like, it just was crazy in terms of the numbers of Australians that signed. But also, it was great to see you guys saying you signed it from far away. And Paul Daniel was denied parole last week, which is a given. I think the parole board realised that that just could not happen. And as I said to one patron who's a Melburnian, I would have just loved to have been there when he was told that his parole was denied, because just would have been a wonderful moment. I'm pretty sure he probably had his hopes up and, you know, he was going to get out there and reoffend, and that's just not going to happen, at least for a while. So now it comes down to, let's find a way to not do this every, you know, 7 years or something. So thank you for being involved in that. Melbourne is a tiny bit of a safer place because of you. So to introduce this week's episode, I want to say that Amy F. is a patron, and this is her episode. And that beautiful Scottish accent at the beginning was Amy's voice. Amy is actually a Scottish lass who lives in Texas now, which is a crazy combo. But she's originally from Glasgow, a city that I know very well, that I've been to. And I have, as I've talked about before, family that I've stayed with just outside of Glasgow. We have very close ties to the Scots in my family, and everything Scottish just brings a tear to my eye almost hearing Amy's voice. Almost did that for me, and she was so kind to record that. Normally I leave it to people who request a place that takes place in a place where it's a foreign language, and so we've had a Greek intro from Marina, and Sophia did a Portuguese intro, but for that one I thought be interesting to have just someone speaking Scottish. Now, I did ask her if she spoke Scottish Gaelic or Scots, which are the kind of native languages. She said she can understand them, but she can't speak them. And I said, let's just do the Scottish accent for something a little different. So thank you so much, Amy. So she requested some sort of Scottish true crime. And actually, I don't have a whole lot of Scotland on my list. England, I have a ton. Wales, I have more than Scotland or Ireland. So I had to kind of dig deep, and I actually found Rodrigo Falcon I always got to say Falcone, but it's not. It's pronounced Falcon. I actually found him on the Missing Persons Scotland page when I was kind of going through the different cases, trying to find if any of them were people who were not from Scotland. So we've been to Scotland before for the Annie Boyerson case and for the murder of Irish nurse Karen Buckley in Glasgow. Annie Boyerson, her case dominated the true crime sphere and continues to because of the strange happenings in that case. That took us to Edinburgh and up to Prestwick from memory. Now, Karen's case took us to Glasgow, but this one will take us further north to the stunning Scottish Highlands, a place that I unfortunately, the couple of times I've been to Scotland, just haven't had the opportunity to experience. So I found Rodrigo Falcon's case, and considering he vanished, we aren't entirely sure if this is a true crime case per se, but he is Argentinian. He was living in the Scottish Highlands, working up there, and his case, other than local Scottish coverage and local to the Highlands, really didn't get a whole lot of attention. It only happened 5 months ago. It's relatively new by this podcast standards, and eternity by his friends and family standards. Rodrigo vanished 6 months ago, so this case won't be as detailed as others or as lengthy due to lack of press and kind of a lack of knowing a whole lot about Rod as he was known, but it's worth talking about because Rod is a person who went missing and deserves people looking for him, and his friends definitely are. If you compare the press that young men get in comparison to young women, there is a stark disparity. There's barely an eyelid batted, and this has really been hit home to me over 165 episodes of this podcast. Add into that, if a young man goes missing after a night on the tiles, even more so, just lack of interest. Rodrigo went missing around the same time, if not a little bit earlier, than Nicola Bulley did in further, she was down in England, and she dominated the news. She got her own primetime true crime show, and she was trending on Twitter for like 2 months. Rodrigo went missing and he deserves to be found, whatever the outcome. But it got me thinking, is his lack of coverage because he's a single young man without a family walking home from a night out, so he's worth less to the media? Would it be more convenient for them if he was walking his dogs and had a partner and kids, making him more worthwhile, the attention in society's eyes? And my belief is absolutely. So as we always do, I want to go back to talking about Rod before we talk about his disappearance. Rodrigo Falcon is a 33-year-old Argentinian who's been missing in the Scottish Highlands since December 2022. Between then and now, I suppose he could have turned 34, although I don't know his date of birth, and a lot of details about Rodrigo very scarce, and I've had to piece them together. But I do know that he came from Buenos Aires, the capital of Argentina. He had his mum there, at least I know, because she came over once he was reported missing for about 10 days, a long way to go from Argentina to Scotland. Something that's, I often think about parents having to make those massive journeys to places they've probably never been before. And I think from memory or from piecing it together that Rod had, despite living in the town of Aviemore in Scotland, he'd actually gone back recently, I believe, for a holiday. Maybe that was an annual thing where he'd go back to Buenos Aires. But seemingly his heart was in Scotland, which I understand. Unfortunately, I wish we knew a little bit more about Rod as a person, yet we don't. But his Instagram, which I believe I found is private, which doesn't help because I can't really piece anything together. But what I do know about Rod is from his amazing friends, including his housemate and workmate, Scott, who has pretty much led the charge to look for Rod since he went missing 6 months ago. And not only did they live and work together, they hung out together, and they've got a Facebook page that is, I believe, run by Scott, which puts kind of regular call outs as well as updated information. Not that there's been a whole lot in recent months. So the Strathspey Herald describes Roddice being 5'6". He's quite a short guy. He is of slim build. He's got dark hair, and it at the time of his disappearance, it was cut in a mullet style, with a and he also has a moustache and a beard. Now, there's lots of pictures of Rod out there. One of the benefits of it being a modern case, and he looks like a real funny guy. And on the Facebook page, Scott has put, and friends of his have put, funny videos, and there's just so many of them, and they just said he was just joyful all the time, which of course things go on internally that you just wouldn't know, and sometimes the most outwardly joyful people aren't internally. But he was known in town for just being this happy-go-lucky. He looks very like kind of goofy and funny, loved a night out, no drama, just, you know, and this awesome Argentinian guy who found himself living for 8 years in a little town in the village in the Scottish Highlands, and he found a place for himself there and he found his people there, and I just love that. He'd actually lived in the town of Aviemore for 8 years, according to the Northern Times. Now, that's really all I know about Rod, and everything from now I'm going to talk about the town of Aviemore. I'm going to talk about his last movements, because that is crucial, piecing together what was he doing when he walked out of a nightclub and walked the opposite direction to home and just walked away, and eventually his CCTV trail completely stops. And this is where I just want to say up front that if you want to follow along with this while I'm telling you about this, Scott and Rod's friends have put together this amazing, which I've never seen before in a case, which is pretty awesome. It's a Google Maps, which is available online. Just search for it. It's in most of the articles about Rod. I can't give you the link naming it because it's just letters and, you know, digits and things. But you can track exactly his movements out of town after this night out, and he's going in the wrong direction to home. Try Googling Rodrigo Falcon, you know, map, and it will come up at least with an article that links through to it. Sometimes the articles have the map embedded in it, and it's been crucial for me to understand not just his movements, but the way that this town is laid out, where he worked, where he lived, and I'll try to explain that to you. So Rod lived with Scott as housemates in a drive called, and I'm sorry, this is where we get into me probably saying Scottish things wrong and my ancestors rolling in their graves, Delfaber Drive. This is a drive in Aviemore, I believe, in the northern reaches of the town, and I'll talk about Aviemore in a short while. He lived with Scott there, and they were best mates. They worked together at a really cool place I'll tell you about shortly, and they hang out together. And the final night that Rod was out at the Vault nightclub in Aviemore, he was with Scott. They lost each other, and then seemingly Rod left and walked the wrong direction home. He worked just outside of Aviemore, but because he vanished from the town of Aviemore, I want to focus a little bit on this little tiny Scottish town, which we will 100% never go to again on this podcast. Now, I had not heard of Aviemore, and I have not been to the Scottish Highlands. I knew Inverness. I have cousins there. I am yet to visit them. I wasn't sure how to say it. And I contacted my dad, because I'm pretty sure I've told you before that my dad spent about 3 years cycling on an actual push bike through the UK and Ireland in the 1970s. And he would go and it was all roughing it. My dad loved that. He'd live on tins of creamed rice, as he'd put it, and he'd sleep in illegally, as he would find out a couple of times in people's, on their farmland in a tent. And he used to say that he could live on a pound a day. So try doing that now. And a lot of his travels he went through, he's got some crazy stories, some scary stories. I often think of it as, if you've ever seen the movie An American Werewolf in London, the guys hiking the moors in that. I always think of my dad when I see that movie. Now, I asked him, have you been to Aviemore, about a week ago? And he said, yes, he wrote back. He's away. He's always traveling around Australia. And I said, how do you pronounce it? And he said, exactly how it's spelt. That's what he wrote back. And I said, that's not helping. So I wrote it phonetically, and he wrote the first one, and then I got really confused and I thought, I'll just wait for patron Amy to record that to tell me exactly how to say it, Aviemore, which it is the way it's spelled. He said that he did go through Aviemore. It was summer when he did, but he remembered, you know, it's a ski resort, so in winter it gets very busy, but he said it wasn't cold when he went through, but he didn't spend a lot of time there. Aviemore is a village of just over 3,000 people located in the stunning Scottish Highlands. The town is nestled in the Cairngorms National Park, and the River Spey winds its way through and alongside the town. And this is quite a large river and something to keep in mind when we talk about Rod's case. The region is also dotted by lochs, which the Scots have actually said, I'm so proud. I was taught how to say loch properly by the Scots while I was in Scotland, because they laughed hysterically when I said loch. It's loch, and the lochs are lakes, and there's quite a lot surrounding this area. While people live here, of course, like permanently, and it's a modern, well-equipped town by all accounts, the main draw of Aviemore for visitors travelling through is the vast natural landscape that it exists within. In summer, people hike the surrounding forests, the Cairngorm Mountain, trails, and visit the local lochs. In winter, it's a historic ski resort town, which has been operating since the 1960s. And actually, the resort has since grown into Britain's most visited ski resort. And during the winter months, it is incredibly busy. And as a result, it has a lot of amenities and accommodations for visitors. And when Rod went missing, it was coming up to peak season. As I typed this sentence, and I did a few days ago at 9:30 p.m. on a wintry May night in Melbourne, Australia, where you couldn't get further away on the other side of the world, so far away from Aviemore. I had the exact same weather as Aviemore was having at 12:30 p.m. in late spring, and that was 13 degrees. Yearly, according to Aviemore's official website, which is a great little resource, for a community of around 3,000 people, it really shocked me that they receive more than 1 million visitors through Aviemore every year. The Cairngorms National Park, which this town and this village and many others surrounding it fall into, is absolutely ginormous. When you look at it on a map, it is huge and goes right up towards the next biggest city, which is Inverness. It is 4,500 square kilometres, this Cairngorms National Park. And if you know the Queen's, well, now the King's, Scottish residence, Balmoral, which is when the Queen died, she died at Balmoral, which was her favourite place. It's beautiful. My dad actually saw the Queen at the Highland Games at Balmoral years ago. Balmoral is actually within this national park. It's 90 minutes from Aviemore. And if you keep going west from Aviemore, you reach the port city of Aberdeen, which used to just be a very kind of almost like Glasgow, a very industrial, rough city, which was industrious, and now it's quite like a happening city. And when I went to Scotland and was looking for work and wanted to work in Scotland, I ended up working in England because that's what was available after the global financial crisis when I decided to move. And I was in a hostel in Edinburgh. All the Scots were telling me to go to Aberdeen for work, and I don't know if that's changed, but they were all pushing me to go there because Edinburgh just had no jobs, not even for locals. So the town of Aviemore has a great website that outlines all that visitors to this area can expect. Native wildlife, lots of plants and local animals, ranger-led tours that you can do, whitewater rafting, local distilleries, of course. And the town has a range of accommodations spanning from log cabins to bed and breakfasts, to lodges, to caravans, to little pods that you can sleep in, to alpine cabins, to hotels. There's also a range of other amenities throughout the town, including lots of pubs, clubs, cafes, restaurants, shops, gyms, a swimming pool, a local hospital, and other local businesses, because as much as it's a small population, they need these amenities, because for about half of the year, it's well, they see a million people come through every year. The only real drawback on local kind of forums where people write, "I'm considering moving my family to Aviemore, would you recommend it?" Most people just say there's no crime, there's no issues, it's an amazing community. The only issue is there's no high school. There's just a primary school, and the local high school kids have to be bused out to another town that's about 30 minutes away or something. But winter in Aviemore is booming, and Rod went missing in December, which is the onset of this season. He would be expecting to have lots of shifts at work, super busy, and meeting lots of new people, I suppose. Now, crime in Aviemore is almost non-existent. It's mostly petty, and violent crime is incredibly rare. The only one I could find was a murder of someone by someone else that they knew, and it was more of a manslaughter. And that was the only one that really came up when I tried to find them. People's houses don't even really get broken into. According to the website UK Crime Statistics, zero crimes were reported in the most recent month available for this in Aviemore, which is March this year. So zero crimes, and that is every single type of crime. So they don't have a midsummer murder situation happening up there. It's more of a, I'm trying to think, I love British crime shows. Maybe a bit of a heartbeat situation. What's a show where they just don't have any and the cops seem to sit around? That's a lot of British crime shows. So Rod, he worked in a very popular local, not in Aviemore, about a 15-minute drive outside of Aviemore, a very popular local bar called the Pine Martin Bar and Scran, very Scottish word, in nearby Glenmore. Now, when you track this on the maps, on Google Maps, it's essentially you go along the main drag out of town, which is called Grampians Road, and then you kind of take a turn and it leads out. And actually, his best mate, Scott, who's also his housemate, owns this business. So he probably got a lot of shifts, I'm presuming. Now, Glenmore is a tiny little town that kind of is situated on the side of quite a large loch, and it's just outside of Aviemore. It's about 8 miles outside of Aviemore. So I'm presuming that either Rod drove, I'm not sure if he had a car, or he would get a lift with Scott or someone else from Aviemore every day into Glenmore. It's located on Loch Morlick. Now, the Pine Martin Bar and Scran, looking it up, it's absolutely gorgeous. It's this highly rated Alpine style bar and cafe, Austrian Alpine style, all wood paneling, super cute. And it's essentially like, they serve meals, but it's also a bar. But they also have limited accommodations in the form of this treehouse chalet, as well as these little alpine pods that are like little, you know, those mini houses, but it's in the form of an Austrian alpine style. It gets very busy in winter. It's got amazing reviews. This is Scott's business. And Rod would be coming up to the busy season, and he'd known Scott for ages. So I presume that they either met through work or through being housemates, and then he offered the job. I'm not entirely sure. But that brings us to the night that Rod went missing. On the night of December 10th, 2022, just 6 months ago, Rod headed out for a night to have a wee dram, as my family, well, my dad's cousin in Scotland would say, who's now passed away, although I'm not entirely sure if Rod and his mates were going to have a wee dram, which was kind of how the Scots would wind down in front of the TV, at least when I stayed with them. They were probably heading out for a night on the piss. I'm not entirely sure. But I will tell you now that the CCTV footage of Rod that we can see as he leaves, he doesn't seem completely incapacitated or anything like that. So ultimately, what we do know is that the group ended up in a nightclub in Aviemore called The Vault. Now, apparently Rod was in completely good spirits that night. He was acting completely normally, the Rod that they were all used to. And he was out with his housemate, mate, work colleague, Scott and some others. Apparently they'd been to a party either at the nightclub or earlier, and then they'd ended up at the nightclub. Now, this nightclub, The Vault, is located on Grampian Road, which is the main thoroughfare of the town. One of the things that stood out to me when looking at all of these names, which it always does with the UK, of course, is how many of Australia's names come from Scotland. The Grampians is a big national park in the state that I live in Victoria, and it's, you know, you see the word Grampian come up again and again with Scotland, and just looking at the surrounding towns, you know, that influence is obviously there. I live near a suburb called Brighton, you know, Hampton, there's a million of them. So if you come out of the nightclub and you turn immediately left, the Grampian Road is basically the thoroughfare that goes through town, and then it becomes, as you leave town, like a larger kind of motorway, as they put it. But if you come out and you walk left and you walk about half a mile, so probably 10 minutes tops, you'd be at Rod's house. But if you come out of the nightclub and you turn right and you start heading towards either the road that turns off to go to Rod's work, or you keep going and it basically becomes what's called the A9 there. And it's the complete opposite direction. And unfortunately, Rod turns right. And as much as the CCTV footage, I can only see dribs and drabs of it, like 1 second increments of it. And so, but I've seen a lot of stills of it. So there's no way to tell really, unless I see like a long cut of it, but he seems to be walking normally, and he seems to be walking with like conviction, like he is going somewhere, but he's going the wrong direction. And you would think, for a guy that's lived in town for 8 years and he's probably been to the Vault a million times, why would he do that? Now, one of the things is there's an Indian, as they put it, you know, there. They call it the Indian. It's the local Indian, you know, restaurant where you could pick up a meal, and they're often open, I believe, late. My local one was in the UK. People would go after a night out on the lash. And who knows, maybe he was going for food. But then when you follow Rod's movements on this interactive map that his friends have put together on Google Maps, you realize he just keeps going. So I'll tell you what he was wearing first off, which is evident in the CCTV footage. He's wearing baggy jeans and a red jumper. He had a coat that went over the jumper, but he'd left that behind in the Vault nightclub. Now, this doesn't stand out too much to me. I think we've talked about this before, you know, in other cases, but when you drink and, you know, you forget your coat a lot of the time, but often because you get hot from drinking, which I definitely do, you often just forget that you've left your coat there because you don't feel like you need it. But outside was sub-zero temperatures, as they put it, and snow had fallen and there was snow on the ground, and it's absolutely freezing. Now, I myself would leave my coat and totally forget because I get so hot when I'm drinking. Even just one glass of wine, I feel my face is like a beetroot. But who knows if Rod totally forgot or whatever. I'm always forgetting coats and things when I go out. But you'd think that the freezing conditions would kind of make him turn around or go, oh, hang on, where's my coat, or, you know. So this is also where it's important to correct what a couple of articles wrote, but I've got it from Scott, from Scott's mouth, about his phone. Now, a couple of articles say that he left his phone behind with his coat inside, but according to his mates, he didn't leave it behind at all. So Scott would say, quote, as far as we are aware, there hasn't been any sign of his phone at all. He's talking about it went missing along with Rod. His phone was a bit damaged and it was always needing charging. He would charge his phone at work or wherever he was. The general consensus is that his phone ran out of battery when he was out, unquote. So it seems as Rod wasn't really super reliant on his phone. He looks like a guy that's kind of, in videos of him that I've watched, he would have probably been able to rough it pretty well in the wilderness. It just kind of really struck me. He seems very low maintenance with how he dresses. There's a lot of videos of him and his mates out kind of in the woods and things like that, and he seems at ease with that. Now his phone, it just doesn't seem like something that he'd need surgically removed from his hand. So I totally kind of get what Scott's probably saying, that his phone was always kind of running down and needing charging because it was a bit run out and he just didn't really care that much. And they generally believe that it was with him when he left the club that night. It was probably in his pocket and it was out of battery. So there's no way to track his phone. So he leaves the vault and it's generally on the page, the interactive map from the friends. This is what's interesting to me. Most coverage says around 2 a.m. and then some coverage says 2:30 and then some says 3. And it changes things a lot because most clubs shut around 2 in the UK, like across the world, really. I'm going with what his mates have tended to put down because they've done this through tracking CCTV footage of Rod. It's around 2:30 a.m., between 2:30 and 3. I'm interested to know about that gap because then his movements kind of pick up around 3:15. If it was 2:30, it would mean that he was somewhere else for 15 minutes or so. The last confirmed sighting is on CCTV footage of him and he's walking on Grampian Road, the complete opposite direction to home, straight dash along Grampian Road towards the southern end of Aviemore as opposed to where he needed to go, which was home on the northern end. And this was around... So from everything I can find, it says, all it says in local coverage is that Rod was reported missing ultimately when he failed to turn up to work at the Pine Martin Bar in Scran. And that's interesting to me only because I'm wondering when this was, because he was out on a Saturday night and was he due to work on the Sunday? That's totally normal for, you know, people I knew were out all night and then go to work with a couple of hours sleep. It changes things in my mind a lot for reasons that I'll get into shortly. But was it Sunday morning he was due to work? Was it Sunday afternoon, Sunday night? Was it Monday morning? I presume that it would have to be Sunday because you'd think that Scott would notice that Rod wasn't at home being a housemate and all that and would try to get hold of him. So I think it would be relatively soon after. So I would say probably the Sunday because I think that Scott would be kind of onto this. Now, I don't know where Scott was when Rod walked out of that nightclub. He could have been gone home already because he had work the next day. They're grown men, you know, they don't have to check in with each other. He could have still been inside. We do know that Rod was on his own though in this entire walk that he does in sub-zero temperatures. Now, I was really heartened to see just how much the community pulled together for this. And I expected nothing less, especially in places like this. And the Scots are just wonderful people. People were let off their jobs to search for Rod once a missing persons report was filed because he was so well known in town and everyone adored him. 100 locals would get together and basically scour the entire region. And you can look at, this is the amazing thing about this interactive map that his friends have put together. They regularly update it according to what's been searched, what hasn't been searched. So you can click on these locks and it will say searched on this day or whatever. It's just amazing. And so you can pretty much track his entire walk and any locks or the River Spey along that area and tap on that and it says whether or not it's been searched. And that's kind of a really amazing thing that I wish more people were aware of, that they can utilize that or have someone do it for them. So large-scale searches were launched with the local police and he started getting quite a lot of press coverage in Scotland at least, and a couple of kind of odd one or two articles from the BBC that really just reiterated what was already said. His mother flew in from Argentina a few weeks after he vanished and the police briefed her on their investigation and basically showed her the areas that they'd searched. This includes divers going into the River Spey, which you have to look at a map to understand this. It runs kind of alongside the town and then out. It's large. And I'm not entirely sure if someone went into it and was carried along or whether, I'm not even sure really because I can't find that information, whether it was frozen at the time. But according to the Northern Times, quote, the initial search is centred on the south end of the village and the Linwilg area where it was thought Rodrigo who hails from Argentina, was last spotted by the Kinnekyle Cliffs by the B9152 road. And these soon expanded these searches to the River Spey. Now, I'm going to take you through the timings of where he was located, because I think this is really important to understand what he was doing, whether he was stopping. I find it quite compelling. And I did have a few initial thoughts that I then put aside and thought, no, they don't make a lot of sense, which I'll wrap up this episode with. And some that I thought that could have been what he was doing without knowing who he was. So according to this interactive map, 2:30 a.m. he leaves the Vault nightclub. He completely goes the opposite direction from home. The Aviemore train station is on the same road. It's just a stone's throw from the Vault nightclub, and he passes this. And then this is the part that confuses me. Their map says at 3:12, he then passes what's marked as the Indian, which is an Indian restaurant marked on the map. I don't believe he buys food or anything. They just know because he's picked up by their CCTV camera. 2:30 to 3:12 is a big gap for what would essentially be a 10-minute walk. So I'm just wondering if there's an issue with that. Was he hanging around outside the vault for a while talking to people? We don't really have that info, and it's not really in the Facebook. At 3:15 a.m., he passes by the CCTV cameras outside a Premier Inn, which is a hotel. And this is on the south end of Aviemore. And they've written on the interactive map, other side of the road. So he seems to cross the road at this point. So he's making like deliberate decisions. Now, this is actually the point on the map around the Premier Inn where he would actually continue along a road right near here, which would take him to Glenmore where his work is. And that kind of factored into my thinking. But then it seems that he didn't do that. He kept going straight along this Grampian Road, which becomes the A9. And as they said in that statement, the last actual confirmed footage of him, which is not actually footage, all of the previous ones are, this is actually someone who sighted him, I believe, driving past, but they haven't said specifics. He's seen at an area called Kinnekyle Cliffs. Now, I couldn't determine exactly what this is other than to say it's not a cliff. From what I could find, it's kind of a homestead land area, but it's called Cliffs for some reason. And they have another marking on the interactive map which says something about a lot. He's seen at the light up wall. Now, because there's just nothing online about what Kinnekyle Cliffs is other than the fact that it's kind of a rocky piece of land, I can't tell you what that is, but what they've marked as the time that he's seen there is between 4 and 5 a.m. So it's probably someone driving past who wasn't entirely sure what time they saw him, but they know they saw him probably because he's got that red jumper on with the jeans. But he'd be pretty cold, but then again, he's been drinking, and if you're walking at a fast race, you may not realize that you're actually getting really cold because you feel hot. We've talked about this so much on this podcast. So he continues along, and then on the map, not far after Kinnekyle Cliffs, it becomes like a field, and they have marked on the map footprints through field. Now, from what I can find, after he was reported missing, they immediately went out and started collecting CCTV and basically tracking every part of Aviemore and surrounds. And when they were able to track him to that Kinnekyle Cliffs, there was snow fallen in this nearby field, and there was very clear footprints that the friends automatically believed was Rod's. And there's footprints kind of crossing through this field that are marked on this map. And then a little bit further, like maybe 100 meters further, it says potential footprints, and then nothing. There's nothing after that, no footprints. It's like he just, from that field, just vanishes completely. So his friend who helped set up, I believe it's called Kai, who set up the Facebook page, said, quote, "The last CCTV was on the opposite side of the road from the Premier Inn, and the last sighting by a person was at the Kinnekyle Cliffs lit up wall on the A9 heading south. His footprints in the snow then lead down and across the field on the southern side of the junction, the Linwilg Junction, where they then stop. There is no way he has travelled this distance without being seen by more people and dash cams." So basically, this was early on in December when they're searching. It's over Christmas, and
a terrible time of year for them, friends and family. And they were basically appealing for dash cam footage because they believe that people must have been traveling. We're coming up to like busy season here. But then again, it is 4 to 5, you know, in the morning by this point, but there's always truck drivers and things like that. And they just believed that someone wasn't aware that Rod was missing and may have just missed this whole story, which is the issue with this. This is why when you see articles about Rod in January, February, Nicola Bully's name is mentioned and it becomes about her. And everybody knew her, all of her movements, and I'm not begrudging her all that attention, but this is a small town where we should have an answer for Rod, and we should be able to, you know, Police Scotland should be able to get a massive amount of coverage to say, look, if you were a truck driver, we're not pointing fingers. We just want to know, did you see anything? He was in a bright red jumper. He's in jeans and he's walking along and he's walking out of town away from things, and that might stand out to you. You know what I mean? But it doesn't happen because they don't get massive coverage. I didn't see coverage in the Scotsman or major Scottish newspapers. It all falls, I notice, on local papers. And if you want something that's kind of maybe heartwarming and may leave you with a good feeling throughout this podcast, you know, one thing that has stood out to me for 3 years or over 3 years is small communities and small papers, they pull together when people go missing from then, and you're probably safer off and better off living in these areas. If you go missing in a big city, you'll fall between the cracks. But the small papers always kind of continue on the coverage even when it's not interesting anymore to the big papers. So keep that in mind. Now, here is some local coverage from a local STV News, which I presume is Scottish TV News, which was local to the Aviemore region at the end of December, with one of Rod's friends kind of talking in it about what kind of person he was as well.
Falcon was last seen after walking from a nightclub on a freezing night almost 3 weeks ago. Friends say his disappearance is out of character. Ian Ramage reports.
Police teams and other rescuers have maintained regular searches over a wide area. This afternoon, police divers switched their focus from the River Spey in the Dalfaba area of Aviemore to the banks of Loch Alvey a few miles south. Friends have posted video of Rod Falcon in typical high spirits. The Argentinian moved to Scotland 8 years ago. He's recently been the soul of the party at a popular cafe by Loch Morlach in the heart of the Cairngorms. Colleagues have been shocked by his disappearance, saying nothing troubled him.
He was really happy. He'd just been home to Argentina, had a month with his family. He's happy. He is a happy guy. He has a lust for life. Should have been going to meet someone. Someone might have been picking him up. Anything. It could be anything. We just don't know. Nobody's reached out so far or had any bits of information that have been helpful to let us know why he was going that way.
He left the Vault nightclub in the early hours on December the 11th after drinking with friends. He was captured on CCTV heading south without his coat in a sub-zero temperature. Extensive searches followed. Mr. Falcon was last seen a few miles south of Aviemore. One report suggests that a friend had seen his footprints in snow. That came to nothing. Police searches are continuing in and around Aviemore. Police are anxious to hear from anyone who may have dashcam footage from that night, December the 11th. Mr. Falcon's mother, who made the trip from Buenos Aires after hearing of his disappearance, is due to return home tomorrow. Sadly, at this stage, with no answers. Ian Ramage, STV News.
Unfortunately, since that, there's just been nothing. Rod was briefly featured as a story on the true crime TV series in the UK, Vanished, at the end of March this year. And some not-for-profit independent diving organisations that basically do this for free have looked for Rod in surrounding lochs and the River Spey, you know, alongside Aviemore, and they've pretty much come up with nothing now. I will say, to bring up the Nicola Bully case, independent divers looked for her and seemed to have missed her in that marshy part the whole time, and they got a lot of crap for that. even though it's probably not warranted because she wasn't actually in the water. She had kind of washed up. That's a very strange case. But now his friends have hired private investigators who are from England who are on the case. They've actually not had to hire them because they're doing it pro bono, which is incredible. And I think that's probably the best course of action because the Scottish police have essentially hit a wall. There's only so much you can do when there's just no evidence at all. And that's why Rod's case, as much as it's scarce on details, is so important to kind of share so that people can fill in those gaps that the family and friends require in order to have answers because he's out there. He didn't just get picked up by aliens. He's somewhere. Now, my thoughts about this, when I first plotted it all on a map and then looked at the interactive map, and I kind of saw where he worked, which is about 15 minutes out of Aviemore, 15-minute drive, a few miles. And when I saw the direction he was walking initially, I had a funny thought. Initially, when I didn't know anything about this case and I just looked at it the first time ever, I thought, did he get turned around and discombobulated because he'd been drinking, or I don't know if he took some drugs? There's no way to know. All I know is that he doesn't look incapacitated in footage and he seems to be walking like he knows where he's going. So I thought, no, that can't be the case because he's lived here for 8 years and he would know the direction. It's like one main drag kind of. It's not that hard to turn left when you come out of the club. He's probably been to a million times. But was he going home? Like his friend says on that footage, was he going to meet someone? And that's why it was really interesting to me to find out when he was due to work next and why and how he was reported missing when he didn't turn up to work, which makes me think it was the following day, the Sunday. Maybe he was just going to tie one off and go to work on a few hours sleep. People do that all the time, especially I worked with, you know, every second person in the UK I knew was like that. But when I saw where it turned off around the Premier Inn point in time on the CCTV, that is kind of near the turn off to the road that goes up to his work. It would take him a couple of hours to walk, according to Google Maps. But I had this funny thought. I wonder if he was going to go sleep at work so that he didn't have to get up and get to work the following day. And this doesn't just come from nowhere. This is because when I first lived in England, I worked in a couple of pubs, and at both of them, staff members would sleep there if they were having a heavy night, and they just... it was easier for them to get up and be at work already. Now, I always found that very strange because in Australia, there's so much red tape and bureaucracy, you just wouldn't be able to do that. But over there, things are different. And his friend also ran the business. So I was kind of, because I worked with the chef, and some days, because I lived above the pub, one of them I worked at when I first got over there, I'd come downstairs and the chef would be asleep on the lounge in the main restaurant dining area before we'd open, and he'd be like, oh, I was having a few drinks like a kilometre away and I just decided it was easier to sleep here and be at work. And I'd be like, don't feel like having a shower or anything like that. And so that was my immediate thought. Was he going to work so he didn't have to get up the following day? That kind of seems strange, like considering what a massive walk it would be. You'd have to hitchhike and it's sub-zero temperatures. Are you really going to walk like 3 miles in the pitch black dark? When you look at pictures of this, it would be super dark. But then when you plot it on the map, he continues on beyond the point of turning off. And his last kind of footprints, because I'm looking at them right now, on the A9 beyond that turn off point. So when you look at this interactive map that the friends made, it runs alongside the River Spey, and he's really not far from the River Spey, his last point. He seems to be on what's called the B9152 road, and the nearest things are really just farmland, there's a country hotel and restaurant which would be closed by this point. There's a number of locks all over the place. They kind of dot the area. Really just farmland, probably a couple of kilometres away, is the Kinrara Distillery. But it doesn't seem like this is not the part of town that's residential. He's walked completely away from that. And you can see that all on the map, and it's why it's important. It kind of backs onto like this quite rugged national park area because it's part of the Cairngorms National Park. So, I mean, I started to think, I don't think that's what he was doing, because he would know that turn off like the back of his hand. You know, you do it every day for work. So what was he doing? I can't tell you if Rod was depressed or anything, and this happy-go-lucky man that everyone knew. I can't comment on that. It seems like a strange way to end your life, to walk into the wilderness and die. But then I thought about it, and I thought about the case of Bryn Hargraves, which we covered recently, who did exactly that, and he was found recently. And he was dealing with a lot as well, and not really alluding to people what was going on. And also the timing with Rod just coming back from home. Oftentimes when the most homesickness is compounded is when you've just been home. I used to get that a lot when I'd live at uni and I'd be hours from home, and I'd go home for a weekend, and I'd feel real homesick, you know, when I got home, and it would be hard to adjust again, and I'd be like, but it's only a couple of hours away. But I that homesickness that kind of sets in with almost seasonal affective disorder, which being from Buenos Aires, he's probably not accustomed to, but after 8 years in Scotland, he probably would be, where you're going to work in the dark, you're coming home in the dark, winter is really bleak. It hit me really hard my first year in England. I didn't expect it because I love winter. All of these thoughts kind of came into my mind. It just didn't seem to me that he was going to meet someone, or that someone would be coming along that road and pick him up, that he'd organised. He's too far out of town by that point, and it's such a long distance to walk out of town in freezing cold temperatures. Unfortunately, I just don't know. This is one of those mysteries. I do have a strong feeling they'll eventually find him. I whether he got confused or turned around, or he was like, he was intoxicated and didn't know what he was doing, or he was kind of like, I'll walk it off, and got a bit kind of confused, and his phone was broken, which probably didn't help. We won't know if he ever called for help. That's the other thing, like, kind of on a night out, always have a working phone at least, you know. I just hope that they get answers, whether or not it's obviously going to be bad at this stage, to be real about it. The size of the River Spey and the number of locks and things in that area, and the number of young men who people try to make a conspiracy theory out of it, that kind of fall into waterways and things. And really all it comes down to is intoxicated young men near water. It's a recipe for disaster. And I think that's probably the answer with Rod. So I want you to go, and I want you to share this and articles about Rod, especially if you're in Scotland. I know quite a lot of you are in Scotland, and I get emails from lovely Scots, and I've got Scottish patrons, because it seems to have just died off, like, coverage of Rod's case. And then it's up to his friends on the Facebook page to every few weeks, remember Rod, like, here, and friends comment, you know, I miss him and stuff. And it just feels like the further away you get from the date that they disappeared, more, less and less people kind of comment and stuff, and it's almost like they're forgotten. And he's not forgotten. His mum, I can't even imagine what she's like on the other side of the world. I mean, what do you do, and how do you deal with that? And I guess she's put all of her faith in his mate's hands, which they're the best, like, set of friends ever, maybe I've covered on this podcast, so kudos to all of them. So share this, and all of the information is read out at the beginning of this episode. It's also on the Facebook page for who you can contact. Their friends want to make it really clear, which Amy read out at the beginning of this episode, the details. But I just want to say that you can contact the Rodrigo Falcón Facebook page. You just have to look at up on Facebook. They've got a voicemail line, which I'm going to read you the number again. You can leave up to a 10-minute voicemail, and apparently it's anonymous. No one will answer it. Don't worry. They want to make that really clear. It's 0800-887-0111. You can also text anonymously. It's 0745-644-100. And the email, and I'm not sure if this is the private investigator, but this is the email on the Facebook page run by Rodrigo's mates, is rod@mm.st. And now it's time for world headlines. Tried to keep it light on this week's world headlines, kind of, but then I realised it's actually not, because our family dog, who I loved and was there when he was born, Jack, he died a few days ago at 14. We only lost his mum, Sally, last year, and he died 9 months to the day that Sally died, and he couldn't live without her. He couldn't adjust. I'm not going to talk about it because I can feel my voice going again. It's the first time I've been able to record. I wanted to record this earlier, but every time I do, I think about it. He died very suddenly, probably from a broken heart, really. Every time I talk about it, I start crying. So I'm not going to, but I just wanted to kind of shout out Jack because he was a beautiful doggy. He was a Jack Russell, shocker. We're not really good with the naming. I won't tell you what the other one in his litter was called, but I'm sure you can guess. And he was just a lovely, happy boy. And, you know, all dogs go to heaven. I hope so. And I hope he's with his mama again. So the first headline is from the Daily Mail. Shocker. Cruise passenger is arrested by FBI after allegedly installing hidden camera in public restroom on Royal Caribbean ship and filming over 150 passengers, including 40 children, unquote. Another reason why I just can't with cruise ships and just don't want to. I did a poll recently on an episode on the cruise ships, recent one. People have been on it and it was kind of like 50-50, you had or you hadn't. And it's just, I just saw this and it just didn't surprise me. Because, I mean, how would they know? Clearly someone found the hidden camera, but how would you know? I mean, this happens in hotels all the time, I hate to tell you. And people, I've seen footage of people in Airbnbs with this kind of detector that can detect cameras and things running around the house and finding hidden cameras. And it's another reason on top of, I've got a lot of reasons because I've done work for them before, why I would never work, stay in an Airbnb ever again, on top of all the rates and the price hikes and everything like that. But they should be able to search for these things. But then again, there's no way for you to know that there's not some sicko filming children on a ship, and putting it in kind of like public change rooms near the pool or anything like that. And this guy, his name's Jeremy Froyes, he should get like life in prison and should be a given because he's clearly like a pedophile as well. And I have no sympathy, one strike you're out, with that kind of stuff. I know I said I was keeping it light and then I realised that I'm actually not. I'm trying to mix it up a little bit. I'll mix it up with the next one. I actually saw this on like a meme Instagram, but I looked it up and it's true. 500 pounds of pasta mysteriously dumped in New Jersey woods. 500 pounds of, I guess, like spaghetti or fettuccine or something by the looks of it, was found in the New Jersey woods dumped. I'm not sure if this was one of you. Now, I laugh that the police have to look into this and that this is like, I'm trying to picture the cop being tasked with this job. But I saw a statement from one of the police that said that they believed that it was dumped when it was raw pasta, but the humidity up in the New Jersey woods during this time cooked it. I'm laughing because this is like a side spin-off of The Sopranos, like waiting to happen. And if you've ever watched The Sopranos, the best episode ever, and everyone agrees with it, is the episode The Pine Barrens, where Paulie and Christopher are in the Pine Barrens looking for this guy who's they're trying to kill, and, you know, they get lost in the New Jersey woods in the Pine Barrens, basically. And I just was like, this is just an amazing story. And there's so many one-liners that could go with that. So the next one, which is a bit more heavy, but I found infuriating, and I can see why people in Papua New Guinea are pissed. This is the headline from the Daily Mail. Papua New Guinea foreign minister resigns after the Daily Mail Australia publishes his daughter's TikToks showing the glam law student doing her makeup and flaunting her luxury life. Here's why they infuriated a nation, unquote. Now, if you're not familiar, Papua New Guinea is incredibly poor. More than 50% of people live below the poverty line. We haven't been here on the podcast before. Not only that, but it's one of the most dangerous places in the world, which you'll rarely hear about. Port Moresby, the capital, is insanely dangerous. I can tell you quite a lot of stories that I've heard. It's crazy. And people there are struggling and suffering. And so the foreign minister, who is essentially like this big, as someone put it, like he fat, bloated asshole, like he doesn't look like he's starving like the rest of the population of Papua New Guinea. Surprise, surprise. He went to Charles's coronation, and most countries took two people. Because you don't want to, I watched it, you know, because I like the royals. I'm a bit of it died with the queen for me. I'm not into the direction they're going. But most countries took two people because you don't want to look like you're ramming the taxpayers' money, kind of just like laughing and setting fire to taxpayers' money. Now, he took 30 people for a country the size of Papua New Guinea, which is disgusting, and it cost the taxpayer in Papua New Guinea $3 million. And his daughter, who lives in Australia, he shipped her out of Papua New Guinea. Like, she's not gonna live there. She lives out here and lives this high profile life where she puts on TikTok all of her Prada and her Gucci, all paid for by the taxpayer in Papua New Guinea. And he took her along for some fucking reason, even though she serves no governmental purpose at all. And they all stayed in these upmarket London hotels. And it's a very let them eat cake scenario. And that's repeated across the world constantly more and more at the moment. People should kind of wake up to that. And so anyway, he's been sacked because, you know, it usually takes some sort of coverage to break a story to put the pressure on them. Otherwise, they just sweep it under the carpet. And thankfully, even though the Daily Mail can be shit, they broke this story, and essentially she has gone into hiding, you know, shut down her TikTok. I don't want people to see my Gucci anymore, my Dolce and stuff, like, because everyone's poor back home, but fuck them kind of thing. He's resigned, saying, I did nothing wrong kind of thing. I can take 30 people if I want. And the people of Papua New Guinea continue to kind of starve and not be able to feed their kids. And, you know, they have really high taxation, and the tax went to them staying in, you know, the best hotels in London and having this extended trip. And he pretty much just took, you know, two people go from most countries, including major ones like the US and Australia and France. And then along comes Papua New Guinea taking 30. And they shouldn't have even been allowed to take 30. They shouldn't have been allowed to even be admitted into Westminster Abbey with that many people. It's a joke. They need to start vetting this stuff. And a lot of nations, as much as they're Commonwealth countries, shouldn't have even been there. People have kind of had enough. And again, it's history always repeats itself. And the term let them eat cake, which Marie Antoinette famously said, whether she said it or not, it's kind of in the public consciousness for hundreds of years now, is it's a loaded phrase, and it's more relevant than kind of ever before. So that's that family. I will try to wrap up on something a little bit more upbeat, even though it's terrifying. I've been following this guy because there's always stories about once a year this guy crawls out of his gimp cave. And I say that legitimately because he's called the Somerset Gimp. He's in Somerset, which is a region of a county of England in the southwest. It's where Bristol and all of that is. We've been there before on the podcast. He pops up in like towns dressed as a gimp and terrifying people. So Somerset Gimp strikes again. man in his 30s is arrested after writhing around in the road and terrifying a female driver while dressed head to toe in black latex, unquote. Now, they arrested this guy midnight, woman just driving down the road. This has happened a bunch of times before. We don't know if it's copycat gimps or if it's the same gimp. If you remember a few years ago, remember clowns were popping up, especially in England, and it was like this flash clown mob, and then it just went away, and they weren't sure if it was kind of promoting a movie or whatever, but it was really scaring people, understandably. The Somerset Gimp has been doing this for years, but he's not promoting anything. He's just doing it. Now, they haven't released his name. He's in his 30s. He was arrested on suspicion of a public nuisance, which, I mean, yeah. But there's photos of him, and he's in a full head-to-toe latex. If you've ever seen the movie 8mm, he's dressed like the Machine, like James Gandolfini. that's the only way I can put it, except he's skinnier. And he's just does freaky stuff in the middle of the night, scaring drivers. Maybe it's for TikTok content, because it probably is. Anyway, he's been arrested, and hopefully that puts an end to it. But I can't tell you if there's more than one Somerset Gimp. I believe this could be a copycat. There could be multiple Somerset Gimps, and I don't know why it's just Somerset. But he'd have that kind of Bristol, you know, farmer, satyr, Basque accent, which I really love. So anyway, let me know if there's any updates on the Somerset Gimp. Have you ever seen the Somerset Gimp? I've been to Somerset and I've never seen the Somerset Gimp. So that's world headlines. I will be back next week with an all new episode. Until then, I will put this episode page on the website at unknownpassagepodcast.com, and I'll link the interactive map. Probably too late by the time you've got to this part of the episode to look at, but it's still worthwhile. Become a patron. It links off the website. Otherwise, you can just search it in the Patreon app. That's my only social media for the podcast. It's a little community, which is great. I do kind of daily posts in there about all kinds of different travel and true crime related stuff. For as little as $1 a month onwards, you can join the community, and it's a kind of acts. That's like a content creator support network, financial support, not emotional support. And yeah, it's awesome. And I want you guys to join, because I love seeing your names and faces, and I love seeing people get involved in the different kind of games or things that I post in there, or hearing people's stories, or different polls. And we've been doing best airports, worst airports at the moment, and the worst are all in Europe so far, mostly, and the best are in Asia at the moment. So yeah, you can just search for Unknown Passage Podcast Patreon, Patreon. If you don't want to join the Patreon, but you want to help out the podcast and its costs, it takes time away from my regular work to do this and to put it together. It's the PayPal is unknownpassagepodcast@gmail.com. And I'll be back next week with an all new episode, all new case, all new place. It will be. Speak then.